Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. This is our inaugural Halo 4 podcast. This is episode 322. We're going to be talking about our first impressions for Halo 4. For those of you joining us for the first time, thank you for checking out our show. We do this on a weekly basis, but we took off last week because we were enjoying Halo 4. Halo 4 came out on November 6th. We took the week off, decided that we would let you guys play it, let you get your fill, and now we're here to kind of talk about our first impressions. But to join me along this journey of what Halo 4 has meant to us so far is one of my lovely co-hosts, Brenton Gamer.
Hey, everybody.
Hello.
It's been a while.
It's been about 2 weeks since we took last week off. We had a podcast a little bit earlier, but it was to cover a tournament that I will actually be a part of this weekend. Refereeing, that is. That is the Fight Like a Girl tournament. We had the Don Juan on to talk about that a little bit, and registrations are already closed, but for the teams that did get to be in, they will be playing this weekend, so good luck to all of those guys out there. And also to join us this evening, we have CM Near, creator of Halo 4 Tricks.
Hey guys, what's up?
Not
Glad
much.
Glad to be here.
How is the tricking realm going for you guys?
Oh, it's going like crazy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You need to get out of Forged and do like regular tricks that you can do in like custom games and matchmaking.
Yeah. The thing right now is I wish there was a theater mode for campaign, but I just can't film the tricks fast enough in general. So I'm trying to limit myself to one a day in terms of airing them.
All right. You guys have pumped out, I think you just released, what, 14 this evening?
Yeah, 14. That'd be right.
Very nice. So, if you have not seen any of their past stuff, guys, Chris has premiered series such as Halo 2 Tricks and Halo 3 Tricks. He did Halo Reach Tricks, and now he is doing Halo 4 Tricks.
Yep, 7 years. Been doing this for 7 years. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's...
But Halo's worth it. It's worth it for Halo.
It is very much worth it. And we are going to talk a little bit about it. This is going to be our first impressions show, and then the next time we talk about this on the podcast, which I think will be the next episode, we may have one in between. I'm not exactly sure yet how the schedule is going to fall, but we will be talking about the first campaign mission, including the prologue, so it's going to be kind of a two-parter because the prologue is technically a separate, or can be technically a separate mission, but it's more of a cinematic piece. So we'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about the first episode of Spartan Ops, and then we'll be talking about the multiplayer map Haven. We'll be giving you guys some tips on Haven, and we'll probably be doing a couple of video things alongside with the episode. So that's going to be coming out really soon. I know we're kind of behind on the bandwagon, behind some of the other content that's out there, but we're going to catch up pretty quickly within the next 2 weeks, and we will be right back on schedule. So tonight is just kind of our first impressions. We're not going to go into any spoiler territory, at least not that much. We may hit on a few things that are early on in the campaign, early on Spartan Ops, but we're not going to spoil any kind of in-game things that happened in the Halo 4 campaign or what's happened in the second episode of Spartan Ops or all that stuff. So we're just going to kind of give our general impressions. Starting off with the campaign, I think 343 absolutely went above and beyond what a lot of people were thinking. I was actually pleasantly surprised by the direction of the story, the kind of the evolution of the relationship between Master Chief and Cortana. The graphics were amazing. Some of the characters were a little flat. Most of them were just really well fleshed out. And having introduced them in Halo 4, we're definitely going to see a lot of them come back in Halo 5 and 6. And I think 343 just laid some really good groundwork to start off this trilogy. But to start start discussions off, let's talk about what you guys think of the relationship that got built between Master Chief and Cortana. We've seen this pretty much build throughout Halo 1, 2, 3 so far. But in Halo 4, it looked like they really dove really deep into this relationship that they've had. And I think they pretty much nailed it on the head. What do you guys think?
Oh, yeah. I thought it was kind of weird that the whole time, I mean, you've got Halo 1, 2, and 3, where, you know, the relationship was kind of implied between Cortana and the Chief, but there wasn't a whole lot there. I mean, the banner was usually about whatever combat situation they were in. They tried to play it up more that Cortana was kind of a utility in a way in the previous games, but it really seems like in Halo 4, they've tried to make her more human. So that was kind of strange. Just seeing, you know, this huge increase in dialogue from, you know, between the Master Chief and Cortana that isn't about, you know, what they're doing at the time or their surroundings. It's just about what Cortana's doing and her condition. And
well, even the dialogue from Master Chief was significantly increased during the in-game action. So you'd see a lot of the stuff happen in the cinematics, but you would never really get that interaction in-game while you're playing as Master Chief. And they introduced a lot more dialogue in there, and I thought it was really cool to see that and to see this relationship really build between Chief and Cortana. And there are some things that happened in the campaign that really kind of helped further define what each person's role is in the relationship. And then there's some really interesting stuff at the end, which if you haven't played the campaign, and if you focus mainly on multiplayer, you guys are missing out on some very big twists in the story of Halo, the Halo universe and Master Chief and everything like that. But it's, in terms of the campaign story flow, what do you guys think? I thought that it was very well done. It was very well fleshed out. The story that they had to tell throughout the Halo 4 campaign was a very different direction from Bungie, but it still very, very much fit the mythos of Halo. Chris, what do you think?
Well, I want to talk about the Cortana relationship really quick.
Okay, yeah.
Because I really liked it, to be honest. I mean, it's forbidden love. That's what it was. It's like Romeo and Juliet, almost. It was just forbidden, which made it more compelling. And that's what I liked about it. Because
it's probably more like impossible.
Well, yeah.
It's strange love. But,
yes, Dr. Strangelove. But I really liked it because it was something that couldn't happen, and it just made it more sad, and, you know, that kind of stuff. That's what I really like the fleshed out story in Halo 4.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see what Halo 5 is all about.
I know, right? It's like we've had this game. It's like, okay, I'm ready for Halo 5 now.
Got the 2 years to go.
I know. It's like, maybe just give me a book. I don't care anymore.
Well, the wait between Halo 2 and 3 was even longer than what we'll have to wait for 5, I think. That was like 3 years, wasn't it? Yeah, 3 years.
It'll be 3 years for this, too.
Really? Are you sure?
Yeah, it's going to be
2015.
Yeah.
Well, that sucks. I thought it was only 2 years.
No, it's 3 years, dude.
When did they say 3? I thought it was on a 2-year cycle.
No, it's 3 years. I'm sure. No, Frankie definitely said 3 years multiple times.
Oh. Damn.
I think he even might have said it at Halo Fest.
Well, that just shows how much I keep up on that.
The story direction in Halo 4, I want to kind of address that question again and get your guys' take on it. What do you guys think of kind of how they brought the Covenant in to start, just like it was for Halo 1 and Halo 2? We saw the same exact thing where you're being boarded by the Covenant. And then the main story kind of picks up after that. I guess to start off with discussion, what did you guys think of the integration of Covenant in Halo 4? We really didn't get much story into the Covenant of why we were there. We just kind of knew on the side why they were there. But we didn't really have any kind of deep look into the Covenant being there this time around. What did you guys think of the Covenant presence in the game?
Well, at the start for me, I was kind of like, oh, not this again. More Covenant? It's just like before. But then it was kind of played off as them being like a pirate squad of Covenant or something like that. And so I was like, okay. And they didn't show up as much as, you know, as they could have. And that was nice because I feel like I want to fight new enemies, and that's what we ended up with the
Prometheans.
Crawlers. Yeah, the crawlers. Oh, those guys. Ugh.
Crawlers weren't that bad. The knights, though. My gosh, it took a lot to take those things down.
At first, I was having problems with the watchers, you know, just floating around because they'd really zoom off when they get in trouble.
Yeah, you shoot them once or twice, and then they're off to scurry away.
Yeah,
but you can also kind of take that opportunity to like take out the knights that they were protecting. But then you have to make sure you take them out before they get resurrected.
Yeah,
I kind of enjoyed fighting the crawlers though with the one shot headshots.
Yeah, they're just like the grunts. They're the Promethean fun. Grunts essentially. I thought the inclusion of the Covenant was very well done. Nothing too heavy. There's still a lot of focus on the Promethean and the Forerunner side of things, and the Covenant inclusion in there was just kind of something to, I think, help bridge it and then kind of continue on the story of the Covenant zeal for the Forerunners. Because if you read the extended fiction, if you read the books, you'll definitely see that there are things out there that kind of really help carry along the story that's being presented in Halo 4, and it's just going to keep on growing. The universe is going to keep on expanding. And then we have the Prometheans now, so what do you guys think of fighting the Prometheans instead of having to fight like the Flood? We were kind of touched on that, but what's kind of your overall experience like throughout the campaign? What do you think of the Prometheans as an enemy class?
Well, I didn't really think about it, but now that you mention it, I'm glad that they're not like the Flood at all. They're like the exact opposite. They're like intelligent AI in a way.
I mean, they have this class-like structure where the Flood was just kind of blobs everywhere.
The Flood was more melee-based. They would just run up on you. They didn't care. The Prometheans have strategy that they use. So I'm glad that it's like another faction. It's a faction that's, you know, similar to the Covenant in terms of just enemy AI, but at the same time different. It's at the same level of tactics, but the tactics are different, you know, between the Covenant and the Prometheans.
Right.
I didn't think that the Covenant presence was really well constructive, like in the narrative. But I appreciated it to, like, break up segments between having to fight the Prometheans, and then, you know, now I can fight, like, some elites and grunts, you know, switch it up a little bit, and now we'll switch back over to the Prometheans.
So
Go ahead.
From what I've heard, that kind of what the Covenant is doing there is a little bit more explained in Karen Travis's novels, and granted, I haven't had a chance to read them. I'm about halfway through Primordium right now. So once I get done with that, I'll start reading the Karen Travis books, but from what I've heard, a lot of that story between the humans and the Covenant and what's happened in between Halo 3 and Halo 4 gets really explained and kind of goes into why the Covenant or this faction of Covenant is fighting against you and how they even got to Requiem in the first place. And it turns out they're just kind of following more of the Forerunner's footsteps and finding all their little keys and guides and everything, and they happened to stumble onto Requiem and found Chief there. And they were the first ones to discover the Fort Under Dawn wreckage. So I think the first Terminal video also goes into some of that detail with that one elite. I forget what it was called. It's like June something. I forget what the title of it's called. I had to look it up. The books do go into detail on why we're fighting and coming in and why they've come looking for this ancient Forerunner. Now, how they get kind of turned to the side of the Didact, I think that's something we'll kind of probably look at or at least see a glimpse of in maybe Karen Travis's third book. I would guess that's just a wild guess. I don't know. Haven't read them yet. So that would be my initial thoughts into how we're going to see the Covenant play into the rest of the trilogy. So what do you guys think of the overall graphics of the campaign? I know graphics is one of the... It's more of the pretty factor. It's not necessarily the story-driving factor, but as far as the environments go that you play in, it does definitely play a big part into the story element of it. So what do you guys think of the environments and kind of the visual style of the campaign?
The visual style was pretty cool. It was, you know, kind of what I expected. What I didn't expect was the cool, like, environmental set pieces, and I don't want to, like, go into it and spoil things, but just when you look out into the distance on the horizon and you see this, like,
amazing... Well, if you need to say a mission-specific thing, just say what mission you're talking about and don't go any further.
Well, I'm not sure I remember the mission name, but it's just when you're staring at the core of something.
Oh, okay.
Okay. You kind of know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yes, yeah. Just stuff like that. And it happens throughout the campaign. It's just amazing looking.
Yeah.
That was always kind of a part of Halo, if you think about it. Even going back to, like, the first one, where you'd look up and you'd see this, you know, massive ring. You could tell that you were on a ring world. Just from, like, the skybox.
Right.
Just cool environmental stuff.
So, the variety of environments, too, was just amazing how much effort they really put into it. Because if you look at some of the past Halo games, the environments, at least in Halo 1, since you were basically going in and going out, a lot of them were reused. Halo 2, a lot of the environments were very similar. Halo 3 definitely kind of branched out a little bit, but there was still a lot of reused environments, textures, kind of story place elements. But in Halo 4, every mission was different. Everything, except maybe the end part of the campaign and the initial foreigner part where you're going in to basically go and unlock this ancient evil that we've been kind of that the whole campaign thing's been going for. You have the reuse of the architecture there, and the visual style is very similar, but throughout the rest of the campaign, you have these really different environments that really fit to a certain feel of the game. You also get to fly a pelican. You get to fly a broadsword. They're a very similar style kind of campaign thing that they've used in the past, like the Warthog run from Halo 1. They kind of reused that in a couple of places with the... there's a part in the campaign where you have to get in the ghost and you have to boost your way through basically collapsing structures. And then there's they pulled another one from Halo Reaches where you were in the long... No, it wasn't longsword. It was... what was the thing that you flew in Halo Reach during Long Night of Solace?
Oh, man. I'm trying to remember.
I am blanking right now.
I can't remember it either.
Wait a minute.
And they said remember Reach. Well, I know, right? Doing that very well.
Saber.
Yes.
So they pulled one of those and they introduced something called the broadsword in Halo 4, and you basically kind of fly around almost like a obstacle course, and you're flying for about a good maybe 3 to 5 minutes, and I thought that part of the campaign was really fun.
Yeah. I think you're always going to have vehicle runs in Halo games. I mean, that's just kind of a signature thing at this point, right?
I hope so. Well, we didn't have it in Halo 2, right? I don't remember where we had it, a vehicle run in Halo 2.
No, they might not have had one in Halo 2.
We had one in Halo 1. We had one in Halo 3. Halo Reach, we didn't have one. But we have actually two of them in Halo 4.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. So overall impressions of the campaign before we move on.
It was just great. I mean, I can't say too much without spoiling anything.
I know, right?
I almost accidentally spoiled something.
It's the thing you were trying kind of not spoiling is more near the beginning of the campaign. So
yeah, so
it's not that bad. I mean, heck, there's been pretty much advertisements about what's in there all over the place. But we'll save that for later down the road when we get to it. Chris, what did you think overall about the campaign?
I felt more engaged with this story than I had with some previous Halo games, so I was really invested and really felt involved playing it. And that's a good thing, so I really enjoyed it a lot.
I honestly thought that the way they told the story in Halo 4 was done amazingly better than Halo 3 or Halo Reach. I thought the characters connected well. I thought the whole plot line in Halo 4 was really well done. And there were things that happened that you really didn't see coming, and there were really just emotional parts where you really just connected with Master Chief in that certain time. And I actually read Krypton before playing the game, playing Halo 4, and it actually helped a lot for some various reason that you guys will, if you've played the game and you've read the books, you know why. And then we'll talk about them a little more as we get into the campaign stuff in later shows. But Krypton definitely kind of helps explain some of the things that are going on and gives a big backstory into one of the Forerunners and kind of into one of the characters in this game. The one being the Didact. Everyone knows that the Didact's in there, so I'm not afraid to spoil that. But it definitely goes into the backstory of who the Krypton goes into the backstory of who the Didact is, kind of long ago when humanity was pretty much devolved because of how much of a threat they are, what he was going through, being revived from a Krypton and all that stuff. So if it's an interesting read, if you guys have not read it already, if you haven't and if you've played Halo 4, once you read it, you'll understand some things in the game a lot better. Other than that, the voice acting was superb as normal. Some of the animations on some of the characters, especially when you're in the Infinity, a couple of those scenes. Is it just me, or did some of the lip syncing kind of not match what you would imagine it to look like? Did anyone kind of find that odd a little bit? Like when some of the characters were doing some dialogue, did it seem like some of the mouth gestures and face gestures were a little bit exaggerated?
I think so, but I can't remember now looking back, but I kind of noticed some little things like that. But that just might have been the lag from my TV to something else. I don't know.
So there was this one part with Captain Del Rio that just seemed, his mouth was really, really wide open for words that really didn't. Do you know what part I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think so.
So there are some parts in there where I think the animation was, it could have been a little bit more refined. Other than that, though, I think the rest of the character animation and the rest of the dialogue, especially with Commander Lasky, was very well done.
Yeah.
And oh my god, does Cortana look hot in this game.
Yeah, the graphics have really improved to make them feel more real.
One of the things that was really kind of interesting is Bungie said that they did with Halo Reach is they tried to really increase the graphic fidelity of the game and really try to push what the Xbox could do. But if you look at this game, the graphics in here are like 5 to 10 times better than what they were in Halo Reach. I mean, maybe it's just kind of the visual art style, but some of the, like, the flora that was on, especially yeah, during, like, the, even the E3 build, just the graphics in there, the detail on Master Chief's armor, the detail in the scenery around there, and even when you're on, or in some of the Forerunner stuff, just the detail that they put into it, and even weapons, everything, it just looks a lot cleaner, crisper, vibrant. I don't know if it's just the color scheme that they used for Halo 4, or it's they completely scrapped the graphics engine and did something else with that.
It's been 2 years since Reach, and technology has really advanced since then.
But the technology on the Xbox hasn't changed. That's what I'm getting at. It's still the same graphics processor. It's just still the same CPU.
Well, back in the day, I'm sure they were still limited to the amount that they could do and compress onto a DVD. I mean, Halo 4 comes with two discs. Disc 2 is, like, huge, and you install it directly on your console. You didn't have to do that for Halo Reach before.
Well, Disc 2 is 3.5 gigs.
Yeah. But, so, obviously, they saved all of Disc 1 for just the campaign.
So they could squeeze in as much as they could.
But, I mean, Bungie even came out and said in one of their Vidocs that they were pushing the limits on what the Xbox 360 hardware could do.
Well, they see that with everything. Who knows what the limits of the Xbox 360 are.
But you look at Halo 4 and you're just like, wow.
Obviously, they haven't reached that limit. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, the next best thing that you could get out of the Xbox is a true 1080p game. I don't think... no game comes to mind that natively runs 1080 on the Xbox.
That's because video games like the 60 frames per second, 1080p doesn't have 60 frames per second. And if you use 1080p at 60 frames per second, the file size would be enormous, and there's no point to do that. So 720p at 60 frames is perfect for video games because they like that.
But I mean, PS3 does 1080p at 60 frames a second.
I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure it does. You can do 1080p at 60 frames a second.
Yeah, well, show me the link then, because 60 frames per second at 1080p is just enormous, and there'd be no point, at least right now.
I'll look it up after the show. But I mean, that would be the next big step for Xbox. Maybe the Xbox 720. Maybe they'll do something with Blu-ray, because they're not. I mean, yeah, we're seeing good games now, but being limited to DVDs for the Xbox, I just don't think that's the way to go for a lot of the games coming out nowadays.
Yeah.
Especially when you have increased graphic fidelity and other assets that are just going to take up more and more space, and you don't really want to restrict people on space too much. You do want to give people that creative freedom to kind of put on the disc what they need to put on the disc in order to make the game successful. So maybe they can work out something with Blu-ray for the Xbox 720.
Well, I'm
sure they will.
But the next Xbox...
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Brent.
Go ahead.
We're talking about Blu-ray on the Xbox, right? Or something? For the next Xbox?
For the Xbox 720.
Well, the reason they didn't do that before is because Microsoft supported HD. Remember when that whole battle
HD
was going
DVD,
on?
Yeah.
Because they didn't support Sony.
Yeah.
Blu-ray was a Sony product. I mean, it still is a Sony product.
So, I mean, I'm sure they'll support Blu-ray the next console around. Does the Wii U support Blu-ray now?
No. I do not.
Well, maybe
I do not believe so. I think it's just DVD.
Okay. Well, I don't know if the next Xbox will or will not. So,
well, I mean, the Wii was still in standard definition. So even the Wii U just going from standard def to high def is a big jump for them.
Yeah. Well, it technically had 480p. That's like the lowest def of HD.
That's standard definition.
No, standard is 360. 480p is like the lowest of the low for HD.
I still consider that standard definition. Because 720 by 480 is standard def.
Yeah, that's a resolution.
It's still standard def.
Yeah, but that's the resolution, not the...
Anyways.
Oh, I guess you're right. Yeah. You're right.
So,
yeah.
But yeah, just to see the detail and the scenery and the environments in Halo 4, just to make as much of a jump as it did from Halo Reach to Halo 4, 343 knows what the heck they're doing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they got hired for a reason.
Yeah.
Microsoft knew that they needed the best because Halo is, you know, their premier franchise.
And they definitely got the best.
Yes.
So, all right. Any closing remarks on campaign?
Money is power, and the game looks great.
Indeed it does. So let's move on to Spartan Ops.
Yes.
So Spartan Ops is the episodic cooperative mission stuff that you do pretty much after you beat the campaign. If you're doing it before you did the campaign, then you're doing it wrong. Go and play the campaign first. Go beat it on normal. It'll probably take you about 5 hours. So Spartan Ops, for the most part, it just takes place on, like, certain scenes. There's, like, certain maps that you can do, and We are already in our second week of Spartan Ops, and they're already reusing some of the environments that we've had in the first episode of Spartan Ops. So that's how they kind of get around the whole needing disk space, I think. So that, what's it? I believe Spartan Ops is a 2 gig install, and then War Games is a 1.5 gig install. I might have those flipped, but I think that's how it is. So there's a certain set of maps that you have for Spartan Ops, and then there's different scenarios that you pretty much play on the maps depending on what the mission is for the certain episode. We did get a glimpse at the first episode before the game came out, so it was basically an introduction to the group of Spartan Force that's going to be involved in these Spartan Ops missions. Team Crimson, so your Spartan Force is a part of this team, led by a Spartan known as Sarah Palmer. And we had a little pre-show discussion, and I think for the most part, she's one of those characters that's just kind of there to help move the story along. Not a very deep character, not very much details back there. She's pretty much an Oni spook, more or less, who just happens to be a Spartan.
Looks like we're going to have to do blah blah for the eggheads again.
Yep. So as far as that goes along for her, it's more just in there to keep the story going along. For the most part, the episodes to me, there's not much depth into them. We'll have to see kind of where the rest of the episodes go. This first season is supposed to be 10 episodes, and we're on the second episode right now. There is some story-driven stuff behind it, but it's... I don't know. Does it seem to you guys... I don't know if you've played the second episode yet or have watched... at least watched it. But does it seem to you that that the story behind it's kind of shallow right now?
Yeah. Well, it's so short. Even the videos are short.
Well, the videos are like, what, 7 minutes long?
Maybe. I mean, I just know they're short. I don't know if they're seven. It seemed like five.
Seven, five, something like that. Well, yeah. They're not that long.
It doesn't matter. The stuff in there isn't even that substantial. I mean, a lot of the video is just filler.
Yeah. So
I mean, I feel like they could have done a better job on the story, maybe.
And I'm wondering if that's just kind of a limitation of how they're turning around the episodes of Spartan Ops, since it's... I mean, the campaign is definitely... that's where the story of Halo 4 is. And yeah. Spartan Ops is just kind of there to help continue the story along. So maybe it may just take a while for the story to develop. But right now, just the character development in there is just so shallow.
There's not much there. Almost non-existent.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand that there's only so much you can do with a character you create. But
I mean, you would think for someone like Sarah Palmer, she was in the campaign. We saw like maybe what a good two or three scenes of her in the campaign, and we got almost no story on her at all. And then we see her basically giving the Spartans a debrief on the first episode of Spartan Ops. So it's all she is pretty much a commander at this point, just a figurehead that is in charge of the Spartans, and that's it.
I feel like they could have shown me what she's about, you know?
Yeah. Give a little bit backstory. So, I guess take a page from Halo 3 ODST, where when Derek comes in to address the ODSTs that they're about to drop, you have this little dialogue between Buck and Derek, and then there's the whole kind of back and forth between the rest of the ODSTs and Buck. So Buck would be almost like Palmer in this case, where he's addressing the ODSTs. He's the guy in charge. But then there needs to be this kind of dialogue on the side with, I guess, Sarah Palmer and then someone else, whether it's like Lasky or whoever runs Infinity now, where there needs to be some kind of character development there. I'll put it this way. If she's mainly there just to drive Spartan Ops, then there's not going to really be... there's no need for character development. The way she is right now is fine. There will be other character drivers in there to help drive the target of the story. But if this is really meant to be something that's almost like a campaign, like goes into the same kind of character depth, character relationships, story complexity, then we need to see something of Sarah Palmer, at least in her background, kind of start to show through in the episodes. At least that's how I feel about it.
Yeah. Make me care about what I'm doing in Spartan Ops. If you want that feature to be successful in the future, and you expect people to pay money for it, I mean, if you got the limited edition, you get, like, the second season free or something, is that right?
No.
No?
Because they haven't officially announced a second season.
Well, I mean, they're going to have a second season. If you're going to have a, if you're going to number your seasons, no, you're implying that there's going to be...
Well, I mean, they're working on a second season now.
Yeah.
But no, the limited edition didn't say anything about getting a second season of Spartan Ops for free. You get all the DLC stuff, and then whatever other goodies that you got in Legendary, like some of the... you have the Spartan armor poster, you have a couple avatar codes, a couple of other info packets and that kind of stuff. But nothing about the second season of Spartan Ops.
Okay. Well, either way, you're probably going to have to pay for some sort of season of Spartan Ops at some point in the future. People are going to pay for that DLC. And if you expect people to pay for it, it's got to be good. It has to be worth their money. So yes. They need to work on it.
They definitely do. And they have 10 episodes. Well, now 8, really, from what we've seen, to really work on it and flesh it out. Granted, they probably already have these episodes written out in stone, so what they have now is going to have to be satisfying for us. And I guess we have to give it some credit because this is kind of a new idea, at least for Halo, and need to give it some time in order for some of the plot lines to really come together.
Well, I
think it might be shadowed partly by the fact that we already know the story of Master Chief and Cortana. We know the story behind humanity versus the Covenant. So that story is already there. We already have some of the groundwork laid out for us. But with the Spartan Ops, it's tied in with the Halo 4 story, but it's almost like its own thing. So it's almost like a brand new cooperative experience in a way. Because it is separated by a 6-month gap between the events of Halo 4 and then Infinity returning back to Requiem.
Yeah, but I mean, they have plenty of characters that they could put in the narrative and flesh out to make it a better experience.
Yeah, I would think so. The reason
that Halo, just the main storyline, is so involving for a lot of people is because they have this weird connection with the Master Chief. That, I mean, even though in the first three games he doesn't talk a lot, you still care about the Master Chief because you kind of feel like that character is you. You spend so much time in the campaign, you know, that it becomes you. You're role-playing as the Chief in a way. But you don't really get much of that in Spartan Ops, so if they're going to make it interesting, they have to flesh out other characters that you aren't playing, you know, and you know, give me some reason to come back week after week to watch whatever story you're trying to tell me.
Right.
Because if it seems like...
You go ahead.
Like,
go ahead.
If it seems like you're just throwing a story in there, like the game type came first and then you had to like weave this weak story around it, don't do it that way, because that's not what I want. I would rather have just like a firefight type of, you know, game mode that doesn't have any story, but you spent, you know, you put all of your team on just working on a cool game type, as opposed to, you know, this kind of hodgepodge of, yeah, the gameplay's fine, it's fun, it's like campaign mission, and then the narrative's kind of weak. Like, I don't want that.
I have to agree with you on that one. Because one of the things is, you really don't connect with Palmer at the start. She's more just kind of this figurehead, and then you're a different Spartan that she is ordering to go out and do these missions. So, more or less, she's just kind of a figurehead and something to move the episodes along.
Yeah.
And then the episodes are so short, at least from the second one we've seen, and then actually, as we're recording this, the trailer for the third one actually came out. So there's, I don't know if you guys have seen that one, but we see kind of a storyline developing there, but it's still really shallow. There's not much depth into it. It's more like these events are happening and then people are just kind of reacting to it. There's not any story development per se. I know that's not the right term to use because, I mean, the story is progressing and things are happening in the storyline, but there's not as much depth to it.
It's not as cohesive. The, like, ludonarrative or whatever, you know, crazy gaming terminology thing that they came up with. I mean, it's not there because you go from these kind of weak videos. I mean, they're fun. I don't want Spartan Ops to fail. Like, I just want, like, longer videos, maybe, that have more story in them, and then the story connects me into what I'm going to be doing for that mission set. Like, it connects me directly. I mean, I need to have a real connection between the story and the mission itself.
Right. Like, the episodes need to be... Like, they don't have to be super long, but take a look at the campaign. The campaign is about... Or each mission was about, what, 15, 20 minutes?
Yeah. It's pretty short.
And the cutscenes in between them were, like, some of the significant ones were quite lengthy. At least for in terms of cutscenes, so like 3 to 5 minutes. But I feel for Spartan Ops, I mean, yeah, you have the scenarios, you have kind of things taking place that are supposed to help contribute to the storyline, but they're so disjointed anyway because the episodic experience is more just a primer to the reasons why you're doing certain missions. And it just feels like there's a real disconnect between what's going on in the episodes and then what you're doing as you're playing with your Spartan 4. It just seems two different experiences that are just magically connected somehow by this story. You're given this episode that reflects on something that's happened on Requiem or something that's happened on Infinity. And then you're like, okay, we're going to do these 5 set of missions that are based around what this episode talked about. That's what it feels like right now.
Yeah. And I mean, I understand this is completely new for gaming. You know, it's not just Halo. I mean, I can't really think of a franchise that... I mean, there might be one out there that I just don't know about. But, I mean, it's a big deal to have this, you know, quadruple A game title come out. And it has this episodic feature where you're basically... It's kind of like watching a season of a television show in a way.
Exactly.
I mean, it's obviously not TV. TV is all narrative, you know, and if the story sucks, you just give up on it. Whereas with Spartan Ops, even if you don't enjoy the story, the game type is fun enough to where you could just play it alone and not care about anything you're doing.
Right. It'd be similar. It would be like similar to Firefight. It's not exactly Firefight, but it's cooperative. Scenario-based gameplay that you're fighting waves of Covenant or Prometheans.
Yeah, with campaign-type objectives. Like, run over here and hit this button.
Exactly.
And then run over here and hit this button. If an enemy gets in your way, kill them.
So actually, that kind of reminds me of one quick thing I wanted to bring up. What do you guys think of the whole in first-person animation of pressing buttons and stuff? And then with the first level, like climbing up the elevator shaft... And having to do all the very few quick time events. What do you guys think of that kind of implementation into the game? I thought it made it seem a lot more seamless. And that you're actually doing it instead of like cutting away, see someone push a button. Or just walking up at something and then holding X and then it's magically working. What do you guys think about of that kind of implementation for Halo?
I feel like they like kind of dip their toes in the water with some of that stuff, but they didn't want to go all the way with it because there were a lot of cutscenes that, like, I feel like I should be doing like a quick time event button right now because it just seemed like it was the angle of the camera was even like a quick time event style, you know, set camera. It's not going to move anywhere. You're just going to see your character do whatever. But
existing quick time events, like the one where you had to hold RB to kill the elite.
Yeah, I mean,
was kind of a little lame.
The thing is, if you're going to put something like that in the game, I almost want it to be a little bit challenging. I want you to basically just challenge me, not even necessarily...
Well, yeah, it needs to be.
Yeah, I mean, just see how quick I am. If it's a quick time event, you know, test my reaction speed. Or test my ability to find whatever button you want me to push on my controller. That's basically what a quick time event is. But to me, the worst ones are just like... Hit A and complete this entire 5-second action that you shouldn't have had to hit A to do. you know, or you know, at least if I'm going to be doing it, make me like hit A to like throw a punch. And then every time I, you know, hit A, it's going to throw a punch, right? You know, have get me a little bit involved in it, make it interactive. But yeah, like the elevator shafts thing, that to me was kind of cool because you hadn't really seen it in any other Halo game before. I mean, there's nothing really like it. But I felt like it was cheap because it's not really a spoiler because it's so early in the game. But the chief looks around to whichever direction you need to jump to, because it really you can't tell just by looking where you need to jump. Really, I felt like I would have had more fun in that scene if it was like clearly defined where you could jump to, and the chief didn't move his head, and you actually had to like figure out which path to jump up. And you know, if you die a couple times trying to go up that thing, so what? Just make it the scene like a little shorter. Make the run up, you know.
Right, because it's not like there's plenty of other cases in the campaign where you could have died, like let's see, the Broadsword run or the Ghost run.
Yeah.
So I thought, yeah, I kind of agree with you. Some of those QuickTime events were cheap. I mean, it was cool to see that Halo's starting to incorporate QuickTime events, but it definitely did feel cheap.
No, but it didn't like hurt the game either, though.
No, it didn't.
Which was important.
I would like to see them expand on that capability for Halo 5, though.
Yeah. Make it interesting. Yeah. I mean, if it's just in there for no reason other than, you know, annoy people, then just get rid of it. You don't need it.
I agree.
But you're having so much fun between QuickTime events that when you do eventually have to, like, hit A to open a door or whatever, it's... Mm-hmm. It's whatever. I mean, it's kind of the same throughout gaming history, where you'd have to walk up to a door, and instead of just, you know, pressing up to go through the door, you'd have to hit A button or whatever to open it. And nobody ever called those QuickTime events. It was just interactivity.
Right. Well, it's just like hold X to hit the switches.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So if you think of those QuickTime events as just...
Well, I think of QuickTime events as like, it's like you're in the middle of an action, and you have to hit a button to maintain the action. I don't consider like holding X to open the door or hit a switch as a QuickTime event. It's an interaction. I consider those two different things.
But like in I didn't play much of Final Fantasy 13 2 at all, but I did rent it enough to play through like the first scene, which like lasts 3 or 4 hours. It's just nuts. But there's like this huge interactive cutscene where you know, you're playing as... Oh man, what's her face? I can't even remember. I should know this, but the pink-haired chick, Lightning. And you're in a QuickTime event where you're fighting this guy in a cutscene, basically. And depending on whether or not you would hit the button right, you would either fail the cutscene and take damage, or you would, like, beat the crap out of the other guy somehow. It's kind of... That's the kind of style of cutscene I want, where there's a little bit of challenge to it.
Yeah. I mean, these are not challenging at all. It's just like, okay... We're gonna tell you exactly what you need to do, and go do it.
I also feel like if they had incorporated like really challenging QuickTime events, there might have been an outcry against it. People would be saying, "This isn't Halo. I want to get this out of my Halo. I want to shoot things." I mean, really, there might have been. Yeah, there's no telling.
Right.
That's just speculation, but I would totally expect someone to start some kind of mess about how QuickTime events were destroying Halo. So they had to make them short in a way, just to keep people pleased. And to be honest, I would rather be shooting, you know, Prometheans or Elites in the face than hitting X to open a door.
I agree.
So whatever. Not a big deal.
Nope.
I felt running around to click on things to activate this, activate that, felt kind of repetitive, just a little bit. I guess that was my one problem with the campaign for Halo 4. Felt like you had to do that a lot just to lengthen the game or the campaign itself. Having this run around to activate three different things. Anyone else? Just me?
It did seem a little excessive, but it wasn't excessive to the point where it was annoying for me. It felt more just that was how the game progressed.
Yeah. I guess I didn't notice it the first playthrough, but on the second one, I kind of felt like, you know, kind of just having to do this and this over and over again. So I guess the replay.
Right. Because in Halo 2, you had a lot of push X to do this as well. You had a lot of interactions for Halo 2.
Yeah.
Halo 1, there wasn't as that many. There was a good number of them. Halo 3, there wasn't that many either, I think. There definitely did seem to be quite a few of them in Halo 4, and I think that's just kind of how the flow of the story went.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to, or I guess let's touch briefly on the multiplayer, because the multiplayer has been one of those things where it's been out for a long time now. We've seen just about every single aspect of multiplayer out there, because that's the one thing they've been advertising the most. That's the one big thing just about everyone who plays Halo is pretty much game for is the multiplayer. There aren't as many people that are interested in like campaign and Spartan Ops. But how do you guys feel the multiplayer plays compared to some of the other Halo games now that you've had your hands on it?
Feels good, man.
Does it kind of bring it back memories? Does it feel similar to a previous game that you've played before?
It feels like way. Halo 3, I think.
Yeah.
More so than anything else. Which is good. I mean,
like dive into some details. Because I've already kind of talked about some of my stuff before on some shows since I've actually played it, but
I guess one of the main things I'm really happy about is when you sprint, you don't huff and puff like crazy. Suit of armor should be concealing that inside your suit of armor for the most part. So that was one of my... I hated that about Reach because you couldn't run anywhere without making a ruckus. I mean, your footsteps are enough. Why do you have to add in heavy breathing?
And when you... not a ghost, but heavy breathing.
Like crazy yes. In the theater.
When you'd asthmatic be filled. Spartan. That needs to be a gamer tag. Somebody needs to pick that up.
Asthmatic Spartan.
Asthmatic Spartan.
All right.
Yeah, I really like the multiplayer. It's fun. I guess that's... I mean, I'm not that competitive when I play Halo. So the multiplayer is fun again. Halo Reach, it felt different. I don't know. I didn't even know how to explain it. I don't know why I didn't really. Well, I mean, I liked Reach, but then it just got boring quicker. So I don't know if it's probably just me, but I can't explain it. But I really like Halo 4. The one thing, though, that I don't like is you can't betray people on your team anymore. I mean, that's what we used to do all the time in Halo 3.
You still can.
You can't.
I've been betrayed three or four times already.
Well, the betrayal glitch is still possible, where you hit your teammate and then you betray or kill yourself. It counts as a betrayal. And I get in Big Team, I think you can kind of betray your teammate by destroying the vehicle they're in. And when they get killed afterwards, it counts as a betrayal or something. I can't remember. But as far as I know, you can't really betray anymore.
No, it's still definitely possible to betray. I've been on the receiving end of quite a few betrayals.
Then that's a little better then. Because I really like that aspect. That's what made playing with friends so great.
I didn't love that aspect in Halo 2 matchmaking. It was awful. You would never know. You would like go into a Team Slayer match in Halo 2. And just automatically, the second you spawn, somebody like throws grenades down. And like sometimes your Spartan would just do that on accident if you'd like hit the trigger or something. Or sometimes it would just happen. But you'd just throw a grenade the second you spawned into the match. And but a lot of betrayers would just do it anyway. Like at the start of the match, you know, throw the grenades down, especially if they were at the back of the pack, because just everybody'd start in that kind of base area in Halo 2. They had like smaller bases where people would spawn, seems like. And yeah, they would just go wild, and they'd get like 11 or 12 betrayals before somebody would finally be able to boot them out. And the second you finally saw that boot symbol, you're like, yes, X, 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 boot player immediately.
Yep, I remember that. And then if they were host, it would take forever to get back into the game, because it would go to blue screen.
You have to connect to a new host, and you had to sit there, and it was just awful. And if you were in an objective game type, you were really screwed, because then it was like 3-on-4, and your team was already messed up from the guy betraying, you know, I mean, like they would blow up vehicles and stuff so that your team couldn't use it, and you'd have to wait for them to spawn again, and it was just awful. I mean, betrayals are fun when you're with people you know.
Yeah.
But when you're online...
when you're with people you know.
Yep, yeah.
That's...
Like, when your friends do it, it's funny. When some on Xbox Live that you don't know does it to you, it's an abomination. and you should have your vengeance.
All right. So, I actually have a hard stop here in a few minutes, so we're going to have to kind of end the show a little bit prematurely, but a couple of questions before we wrap up is, what do you guys think about having the DMR and the BR in multiplayer? Personally, I'm really happy to see it, because there's definitely certain situations that I use either one. I definitely lean more towards the DMR.
Yeah.
But what do you guys think of having kind of both of those weapons in there?
I like it. I mean, in some cases, you have to decide which one you want to use. I feel like the DMR is really good for long range compared to the BR, but that's just me. But I like them. I'm glad that you have the option to use one or the other now instead of just one.
Brent, what do you think?
I love the DMR.
Yeah?
I love it. I thought I would love the BR more, but I've been getting more kills with the DMR. I don't know. Maybe it's because I've been playing Reach so long, you know?
Or more recently.
Just having that capability for range. And because I mostly play like objective team game types, I'm on, you know, bigger maps in general. So you need that range. Right. And it still feels satisfying to get a headshot with the DMR. Like, I always felt that the BR headshots weren't as satisfying as the DMR. Like, just one shot, boom!
Definitely.
Boom! So, I'm kind of embarrassed to say it. I thought I would love the BR more. Now, up close, I mean, the BR has an obvious advantage.
A lot of people said that they would think they would kind of go back to the BR.
Yeah.
I personally find the DMR a lot better.
I like the light rifle.
I cannot get used to that light rifle. I don't know what it is about it. I cannot play with the light rifle.
Popping crawlers in the head with that thing. So satisfying.
More power to you, man.
Last
question I wanted to ask before we wrap up is, what do you guys think of the speed of Halo 4? It's a lot more faster pace with the instant respawn and everything. And even they've increased the score from 50 to 60 for Slayer. So there's definitely, I mean, the gameplay is faster. They have to increase the kill count. But what do you guys think of the speed of Halo 4 multiplayer?
I think it's fine. I haven't really. I just miss seeing the kill count instead of just points. I guess that's the small things. But I think it's okay. I think the pace is just like it was in Halo Reach.
So it's very Battlefield-esque. Because that's what they do in Battlefield is you have your individual score.
Yeah.
That you get your own XP for, but then you have the overall team score. So it's very indicative of something like that.
Yeah.
I personally think having the whole, like, 10 points per score or something like that, I think that's a little ridiculous. I think they still could have kept a, like, number of kills, but they definitely did pull a Call of Duty where each kill for Team Slayer is 10 points. Yeah. I don't get it, but, I mean, what do you guys think about that?
It's all right. I do kind of miss just having a kill count. I like small numbers. But then again, I understand that with this new system that they're trying to do, they kind of needed those double-digit numbers.
Why do you say it that way? Because for me, just like, why bother doing it that way?
Well, because like individual things are like 5 points that you do. And essentially, they're just counting up how many XP credits you're going to get, right? I mean, when you get an assist and it says plus 5, that's plus 5 XP, right?
Yeah, it's plus 5 XP, but it's not plus 5 right. to...
Not to your team score, because you didn't get a kill. But what I'm saying is that number is essentially... Your personal number is just how many credits you're going to get at the end of the match. How many Spartan XP or whatever they're calling it.
Yeah, it's
So, I mean, it's XP-based. So, yeah, it's XP. I mean, the kill's worth 10, and the assist is worth 5. That way they can give people experience points for actions that aren't just killing. And I guess you could have done that. I guess you could still have had a kill count that just shows up, that you can just see how many kills you got and not how many points you're going to get at the end of the match. But they're just pushing the progression thing so hard that they want you to be able to see how much XP you're getting as you're doing stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
So, okay. I mean, for me, it's just... I don't know. I personally thought it was something stupid, and it's really not needed.
No, I don't love it.
So, okay. Well, that's all the time we have for tonight, guys. I know we haven't really covered too much, but multiplayer has been covered enough already from press stuff before. We just want to kind of get a glimpse of our initial thoughts of campaign Spartan Ups, since those were the two other big things we really didn't have much information on before. So I hope you guys kind of glean some information from this. Maybe some of your opinions differ from ours. We would love to hear what you guys think about Halo 4. The next show that we'll be talking about will be covering the first campaign mission, the first Spartan Ups episode, and then we'll be doing some tips for Haven. And that's going to be a similar format that we're going to use for the rest of the shows that we have going from here on out, where we're going to talk about one campaign thing, one Spartan Ops thing, one multiplayer map, and then kind of cover some custom games, maps, and all that stuff, and then the revival of Tales from the Foxhole.
Oh, man.
I know, right? We haven't done those in a long time. I want to thank you guys again for listening. For all of our new listeners, thank you for tuning in and subscribing to our show. You can visit us at podtaggler.com. We will be resuming our Monday night matchmaking this next Monday, which is going to be the 19th of November. We are going to hold the same time for now. We will change it as needed. So it's going to be 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. You can check us out on Twitter, which is twitter.com/podtaggler, Facebook, facebook.com/podtaggler, and then YouTube, which is youtube.com/podtacktv. And we are looking to do some tips and tricks videos to kind of go along with the episodes. At least that's the plan. We'll see how well that comes together. Take a look out for those. Visit them, subscribe to those. You can also subscribe to our show if you're listening to this through the website. You can subscribe via iTunes, via Zune Marketplace, or via RSS feed. All those links are on our homepage as well. If you have any questions or comments or anything Halo 4 related, send them to us at submissions@podtaggler.com, and we will be talking about those on upcoming shows. So if you have anything that you want to talk about, any questions that you even may have, feel free to send them to us. And that's a wrap, guys. Thank you, CM Neer, for coming on.
Yeah, no problem. Glad to be here.
And we will see you guys next time.
Bye, everybody.
See ya.
Keep on fragging Sarah Palmer.
Yeah.